Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. A lot has been written in the last few months, or many of you know who write in on my blog, but I can't compare to some of the best, and one of the best is coming on my show in just a few minutes. His name is Brad Friedman, and he's the author of the Brad Blog. What is a blog? Well, most of you listening to my voice know what a blog is. Blog is short for weblog. It includes those, I guess, tens of thousands of us, I would suspect, all across the Internet, all across the United States and the globe, who write down our feelings on the Internet and get comments from people who read it. There are all kinds of blogs. There's liberal blogs, there's conservative blogs, blogs that focus on a particular topic. And really, it's become the nationwide marketplace of ideas, if you will. We can all write in and hear ourselves speak, and in many ways get around the mainstream media, which I believe, and I know my guest in just a few minutes, Brad Friedman, believes, are not covering all the stories of the day. So it's up to the bloggers, whether left or right or moderate, to bring out those stories. I bring you the inside scoop on my radio show, but Brad Friedman very much gives you the inside scoop on his blog, and so I hope you'll call in at 877-57-SCOOP and ask him some questions. I've got a lot for him. Let me introduce him to the show. Brad Friedman, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, one of the things that you're most famous for, Brad, and actually the way I first found you, is the incredible work you've done in discovering Clint Curtis. Now, some of my listeners who've been around a while know who he is. He's actually been on the show. But why don't you tell us, Brad Friedman, who is Clint Curtis and why his story matters?
All right. Well, I'll try to give it to you in the smallest nutshell I can here. Clint Curtis was a software programmer who was working at a company down in Florida, Yang Enterprises, Inc., a software firm, where their attorney and registered lobbyist was a man by the name of Tom Feeney. Now, Tom Feeney, at the same time as being their corporate counsel and registered lobbyist, was also the Speaker of the Florida House at the time and had previously been George Bush's running mate for governor back in 1994. So he's very well connected to the Bushes. And,
One second. Do you mean Jeb Bush's running mate in Florida?
Yes,
Sorry. No problem. You said George. I just wanted to okay, go ahead.
Okay,
Jeb Bush's running mate.
Jeb Bush in 1994, that was his first run, and it was an unsuccessful run. Tom Feeney is also most famous, I think, for being the one back during the 2000 election debacle to have said that he didn't care what the Supreme Court decided. He was going to make sure that the electors of Florida were appointed to George W. Bush, no matter what the rule of law came down as from
yes.
the Supreme Court.
In fact, I remember back at that time, he actually convened legislative session in Florida to overrule the voters if they should choose to go for Gore.
Correct.
But now tell me, so Clint Curtis is working for Tom Feeney. He's working for the software developer. I know when he came on my show, he mentioned he was a lifelong Republican, at least until a famous incident that occurred. Why don't you tell us what that incident was?
Yeah, he was working for Yang, not for Tom Feeney. Tom Feeney was working for Yang
gotcha.
As well. And Feeney came into a meeting one day with the CEO of Yang, Mrs. Yang, and her executive secretary, Mike Cohen, and Clint Curtis. And essentially, Feeney asked if they could develop a prototype that would flip the vote. He was very specific in what he wanted, that it had to be usable on touchscreen machines, that it couldn't require any additional equipment like a keyboard and so forth, and that the source code, the routines in the source code had to be essentially invisible if anybody was to look at the source code. Now, at the time, as you point out, Curtis was a lifelong Republican, and the impression that he got from the meeting is that Mr. Feeney was interested in this because he feared Democrats would be doing this, would be trying to flip the vote in with electronic voting software in the future, and he wanted to know what, you know, to look out for. So Curtis said at the time, well, I can't really, I can do the first two things, but I can't hide the source code, hide the routines in the source code if anybody was to give it a look. Nonetheless, he was tasked with this job, and he's given me a sworn affidavit to this effect and later made sworn testimony to members of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. That, by the way, was videotaped and is on bradblog.com if you'd like to see his testimony to them. So he went away. He created this program. It's a very simple program, and it meant to be a prototype, if you will. Came back, gave it to the CEO the next day, and said, look, I was able to do everything he asked for. The only thing I couldn't do was hide the routines. If anybody looks at the source code, they'll, you know, you can't hide these routines.
Brad, let me interrupt you just a second, because yeah. I want to make clear our listeners understand. You said it. I just want to make it very clear. Yeah. This is a program that, if you manipulate it in the right way, would actually change the outcome of the vote. In other words, it doesn't matter what the voters choose, that program could elect a Republican.
Correct. It was set up so that if you knew there were sort of invisible buttons on these touchscreen machines, where if you knew where those buttons were and the, you know, the right sequence to press them, essentially what it would do is it would check the numbers that were in so far, and if your candidate was leading, it would leave things as is. If your candidate was not leading, what it would do is it would give that candidate 51% of the vote, and then 49% would go to all the other candidates in the same proportion that they had had them before the flip occurred.
Okay, so we took this thing to Tom Feeney. And by the way, folks, we're going to talk about some new – this isn't just old news, because I know some of you heard this before. We're going to talk about some new updates in the case in a minute, and then we're going to go on in the last half of the hour and talk about the role of the bloggers in general. So I hope you'll stay for both the first and the second half and give us your calls at 877-57-SCOOP. Back to Brad. So Clint Curtis is going in. He's showing his vote-flipping software to Tom Feeney and Yang Enterprises. Then what happened?
Well, he's actually not showing it to Tom Feeney. He's showing it to the CEO of the company.
CEO of Yang.
He delivered it on a CD with documentation and so forth.
Okay.
And he says, well, I could do everything except hide the routines if anybody was to look at the source code. And he claims that Mrs. Yang then said to him, she's the CEO of the company, she said, you don't understand. We have to hide the source code in order to get the contract. This is to flip the votes in South Florida. That was the first he had heard of that, which was obviously a concern of his. But as he didn't suspect that it would really go anywhere, because you couldn't hide the source code if anybody gave it a look, you know, it was mostly left at that for the moment. In the meantime, he was seeing all kinds of things going on at this company. There were illegal aliens who were working there from China. They were inserting wiretapping code into contracts that this company had with NASA, top secret contracts, where you know, illegal aliens were certainly not allowed to work on the you know, on these projects. And so, you know, eventually, a few months later, he turned in his resignation. He had had it with his company and the things that he had seen there.
And did he report the vote-flipping software and the secret wiretaps to the authorities?
Well, what he did at that point was his next job was at the Florida Department of Transportation, and where this company, Yang, had a contract. And once he was there, he was able to see that this company was overbilling for the project. They were actually submitting time reports for work that he had done when he was at Yang that he knew he didn't do. So he went to the Florida Inspector General's office at the FDOT and you know, told him what he knew about that contract, specifically that they were overbilling, specifically that they had illegal aliens who were there and working on it.
And what did the Florida officials say to him?
Well, they decided to investigate this. It was a whistleblower case. They decided to investigate. It was actually he and another whistleblower there at FDOT who made this report initially. And sure enough, a few months later, both he and the other whistleblower found themselves fired by FDOT
By the Florida Department of Transportation.
Correct, with no real explanation as to why they were being fired. Now, they both filed whistleblower suits and ended up winning.
There's an important investigator that appears often at your website, which is bradblog.com. And I got to tell you, Brad Freeman, I think, has done more research and on this particular topic than anyone I know. And I really want to commend you for doing some good, hard journalism and finding this out. But there's a guy by the name of Raymond Lemme, L-E-M-M-E. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. That becomes a very important player in this story. Tell me who he is and what happened to him.
Yeah, indeed. Raymond Lemme, actually.
Lemme, okay.
I understand it's pronounced. He was the Florida Inspector General that I mentioned that Curtis had brought these charges to. And he was tasked with investigating the claims that Curtis and the other whistleblower had made to the IG's office. This is a troubling story, but he went about this investigation, and Curtis, as I mentioned, had been fired by FDOT at some point. Down the road, Lemme goes to Curtis, at least this is what Curtis claims in his sworn affidavit, that Lemme came to him in mid-June of 2003, and said, hey, I've been working on this thing. You're going to be very happy with the results. They're going to come out in a few weeks. This corruption goes, quote, all the way to the top. So keep your ears open. I think you're going to be very happy with the results. 2 weeks later, Raymond Lemme is found dead in a Valdosta, Georgia motel room.
Valdosta, I should note, for people who don't know where it is, it's very close to the Florida border, but it is in Georgia.
Correct. Now, Lemme was working out of Tallahassee on this at the Florida Department of Transportation.
And Tallahassee is very, very close to Valdosta. Now, did he have work in Valdosta? Do we know why he was in Valdosta? I mean, found dead in a hotel room, that could be all kinds of things.
Right. So far, nobody has been able to come up with a reason what the heck he was doing in Georgia at all. And when Curtis first brought this up to me in one of our early interviews, you know, I asked him, well, what was he doing in Georgia? And Curtis said, well, I, you know, can't tell you for sure, but I can tell you that in Georgia there are no mandatory autopsy laws.
Which exist in Florida.
Which do exist in Florida, and as I'm not sure if I got to say it or not, but the police had ruled this death as a suicide. So
Now he's found dead in a Valdosta, Georgia hotel room. Why would the police call it a suicide?
Well, there was reasons to believe in general that it was a suicide. There was a note that appears to be a suicide note. There was a he was found, by the way, in the bathtub with two slashes to his left wrist. And a double-edged razor sitting on the next to the tub. By the way, there was no water in the bathtub. He was fully clothed, and he was in the bathtub.
Now, the suicide note, did it mention anything about this investigation?
It did not.
Do we know whether it was in his handwriting or not?
The family seems to feel that it is. It was, however, not signed, and there are a few other oddities about this note. For example, it's one of these very generic notes. I think it's five or six lines total. You know, I am very depressed. I can't take it anymore. I love my family. I'm not reading it here verbatim, but it was
generally. Yeah, I get
generally,
the idea. Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, Marianne. Marianne is the name of his wife. And that was the end of it. And it wasn't signed. And most of note there is that he had a daughter. He has one child, a daughter, who was to be married just 2 months later in September, and he doesn't bother to mention her by name. He mentions his wife, and he says, I love my family, but he doesn't mention his only daughter who was getting married in a couple of months, which seems very odd, but frankly, that's only one of the odd things that we've discovered since about this case, since I've been looking into it.
One of the things you've discovered that's up on your website is apparently there are some new pictures that came out just, I guess, this week or last week, that the Georgia police didn't have? Why don't you explain what happened
there? Yeah, well, as I mentioned, they ruled it a suicide, and sort of actually just to close the loop on that one idea, Curtis had, you know, pointed out that there was no mandatory autopsy laws. Had he committed suicide in Florida, there would have been an autopsy, but because it was done in Georgia, a border town near Tallahassee, there was no autopsy apparently required. Now, the police report, which rules it a suicide, says that there were photographs taken of the scene, but due to a failure in the camera's flash memory cards, there would be no photographs available. Well, that was back in 2003, and just last week, we were able to post at bradblog.com the photographs from the crime scene. And they've been verified and confirmed by the Valdosta police as being the photographs.
I guess I dare not ask you how you got them. I suppose you won't reveal your sources, and I wouldn't blame you if you didn't.
Well, actually, in this case, I should give credit. It was another reporter who was out there sort of knocking down doors and trying to get at the truth. And somehow or another, he was able to shake these photographs out of the Valdosta police.
Now, what do these photographs show in terms of the question of whether this investigator into, among other things, Florida voting fraud was killed or committed suicide?
Well, there are a couple of troubling things that the photograph shows. One, where the police report says there was no other signs of trauma to the body other than the two slashes on his arm. There was no other visible trauma. However, if you look at the photographs, and we have them up online, you can see what appears to be quite clearly a rather large bruise on the right side of Mr. Lemmy's neck.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, he could have been killed with the bruise to his neck, and then whoever did it could have slashed his wrist to make it look like a suicide.
That could well be. There's other stuff that's just unexplained in there. For example, the police report talks about a black leather belt that was used, presumably as a tourniquet, sitting next to the tub on top of a white towel. Now, the police report says that there's dried blood visible on the belt, but none is visible on the towel.
Which, of course, suggests that it was used on him, but not...
Well, in truth, we have now a photograph of that white towel and that belt. There's blood all over that towel. Now, I'm not sure of the specific significance of the blood being all over the towel, but what I do know is it shows that there is stuff in that police report that simply doesn't match up with what we know from the photograph.
Now, let me ask you this. The only thing inconsistent, then, with the theory that he was murdered would be the family claiming that his suicide note was in his own handwriting. I'm not sure how you explain that unless someone, I guess, had a gun to him and forced him to write it. Are we sure that the suicide note was in his own handwriting, or is that still an open question?
I believe it's still an open question. The wife said, I believe in the police report, it said that she felt it was his handwriting. And, yeah, as you point out, somebody, you know, it's quite possible that somebody could have had a gun to his back and forced him to write it. We don't know that for sure, but, you know, the note itself and some other inconsistencies that I haven't mentioned yet, some real troubling ones with dates on this thing, seem to indicate that something's amiss. And then you follow that up with the Valdosta police, who I began speaking to about some of these questions. The public information officer over there, Captain Brian Childress, had been very nice to me the first day that I called, and you know, had said that he needs to pull the report and look at some of these questions that I have, and that he would get back to me. He did, by the way, tell me that the case had been reopened.
Good.
Not necessarily. It was reopened back in December of last year due, as he put it, to interest on the Internet. I think he was talking about the reporting that I had done.
I think so.
Then he mentions, well, we talked to somebody at FDOT.
At the Florida Department of Transportation.
Yeah. And closed the case again shortly thereafter.
Wow. Wow. I want to go to the phones because there's a lot here, and I know there's more for you to say, Brad. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also contribute by writing on the blog, my blog, at www.radioinsidescoop.com. My blog's nothing like Brad's blog, but it is part of the radio show, and you can put your comments there. We'll be reading some of them on the air. Let me go quickly to a caller, then we'll go to commercial and come right back. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Brad Friedman.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for what you're doing, for speaking to this issue, and for Clint, too, for doing it. I just, you know, what in the hell have we got for government right now? It's just, you know, the more you learn every day, it's just like, this is a nightmare to end all nightmares. Is there any legal recourse, Mark, do you think, that the people have?
Well, recourse on what? On voting? On Raymond Lemmy? On Clint Curtis?
I'm thinking the most massive lawsuit for damages that the world has ever heard of filed against this government that has done this to us. You know, that's what
I'm
thinking.
Well, you know, I tell you, it's really hard for something this political to seek justice in the courts. I mean, you have to look at very specific things. I don't believe I can go in and sue the government because an investigator in Florida was killed looking into a fraud in Florida. Now,
well, that's just such a small part of it. I mean, the whole thing of stealing a government away from the people, of taking away free elections, of rigging
votes. I'll tell you, Dave, and I know it's you because you're a frequent caller. I mean, you know, I personally have worked both on the congressional challenge to Florida electors back in 2000 and on the challenge to the Ohio electors in 2004, which is the legal way of challenging an election. There really is no other constitutional way to do that. Of course, there is always the way that Brad Friedman is doing, which is to notify people, to let people know. The press is the fourth estate, if you will, the fourth branch of government, and you let people know, and you hopefully get people angry enough that they demand it. Obviously, the Justice Department could have an investigation any moment into voting.
Not
Florida officials. Well, that's the problem. You got a Justice Department controlled by the very administration that seems to have succeeded by fraud. Now, I mean, I don't know that that's true, but for one thing, we need to investigate it. And frankly, the only way this Justice Department will investigate is if we in the Fourth Estate, we in the press, we in the blog community, people like you, Dave, write enough, call your congressman enough, get angry enough, make enough.
I do anything I possibly can. And Brad, I'm so grateful for you going out and telling your story. Are you getting any big media that will listen to you?
A lot of them are listening to me, yes, and have been talking to me as soon as I broke this story and continue to talk to me. There's a very strange thing happening in the media, and maybe we'll be able to talk about that a little bit later, that has made these guys very frightened to report on things like this. So let me take the quick opportunity, though, to give you a couple of things that you can do. Out of all of the work that I've been doing on bradblog.com on these election irregularity issues, I've formed an organization called velvetrevolution.us, and we've just launched a massive campaign against the voting machine companies.
Brad, let me just interrupt you right there. I've got to go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to hear about Brad's campaign, which is also called the Velvet Revolution, what he's doing to protect our voting rights. I know it's a longish explanation, and I don't want to cut him off further. So he's going to have all the time after the break to answer that question.
Thank you both.
Thank
guys.
You very much for your call, Dave. I've got callers on the line, so hang on, and we'll get right to more calls at 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back after these messages.
At the gateways to cities and towns across the globe, a familiar gear wheel signals. Rotary is here, living their motto of service above self. More than a million Rotarian men and women worldwide support humanitarian work in your community and our world community. Service to youth, to the elderly, to the disabled, and the disadvantaged. In every corner of the globe, Rotary means friendship and helping others.
Isn't it nice to know that there's still a place on television for the local citizen? Isn't it nice to see real television once in a while? Take a minute and check out the shows on Channel 10. It's interviews. It's information. It's your neighbor from across the street. It's your elected official. It's hobbies and topics that interest you. It's homegrown quality television, and it's on Cox Cable Channel 10.
Following the tragic events of September 11th, there have been hundreds of violent attacks against innocent Americans.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
Remember, please stop the hate.
We're stronger when we are united.
Remember. Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
One nation under God.
Indivisible.
With liberty.
And justice.
For all.
In America, there's either room for everyone or it's not America.
Don't pick the wrong fight.
Let's keep America land of the free.
Stop the hate.
Excuse me, Ms. Executive, who studied 4 years of math, including trigonometry, and now sits in a huge office and drives a finely tuned luxury car?
Yes, Mr. Only learned basic math in school, so still have a low-paying job and have to live with your mother.
Sorry to bother you, but the vice president who took AP Calculus and gets paid more than the rest of us combined wants to know if you'll be leaving early like you usually do to play golf.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll let him know. If you need me this weekend, I'll be working late, filling out your expense reports and timesheets, because it's the only kind of math I can handle.
Great. Simple addition and subtraction sound right up your alley.
Thanks. Have a good weekend in the country, ma'am.
I always do.
Want to get ahead in life? Learn math. Algebra, trigonometry, calculus. Because math is power. To learn more, log on to mathispower.org. A public service message brought to you by the National Action Council for Minorities in Engineering and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And someone else who is bringing you news the government does not want you to know is Brad Friedman. He's my guest today and the author of the Brad Blog that you can find at bragblog.com. He's busy reporting on a number of subjects, but the subject that he's most famous for and the one that we really have to give him credit for helping to break the news and get it into the mainstream press is the story of Clint Curtis, that Florida programmer who was asked to commit voting fraud, to actually develop vote-rigging machines by then-Speaker of the House, now Congressman Tom Feeney. We've been talking about the strange death of the guy, Raymond Lemmy, who was investigating that crime, that vote-rigging crime. And we're also taking your calls at 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Brad Friedman.
This is Alice from Northern California.
Hi, Alice. How are you?
Oh, I'm fair.
Well, that's fair is better than worse than that.
Yeah.
What can I do for you?
Well, I want to say something here. What this crew has done and is doing to us is criminal, and it sounds like we can prove it. Is there nothing that we can do?
Well, I think that's actually where the conversation was going. We were asking before the break what it is that Brad is doing. Part of what he's doing is something called the Velvet Revolution. Brad, tell me what that is.
Yeah, well, this caller and the previous one, you know, ask a good question. You know, they seem frustrated. Is there nothing we can do? John Conyers today issued a statement on this Jeff Gannon, James Guckert business. Which I have a feeling you guys must have talked about on this show previously.
Actually, I very much want to get to that, yeah. Brad, and I'm going to get it to later in the hour. Tell us specifically, though, on voting, what
well,
you're doing.
You know, he said, when will we say enough is enough about all of these questions? And the problem is the government right now is really hamstrung, to, and the Democrats in particular, to being able to do anything about it. So what we've said at velvetrevolution.us, which is a coalition now of almost 100 organizations devoted towards election reform, is, you know, the heck with the government for now. We're going around them, and we're taking it straight to the voting machine companies. And what we have done is sent a letter to the 9 voting machine companies asking them, giving them 60 days to publicly announce that they are going to open their hardware and software for public inspection, that they're going to provide voter-verified paper ballots with every vote cast, that they're going to institute corporate policies that keep their executives from making statements like the one that the CEO of Diebold made in a fundraising letter to Republicans.
The statement, of course, was that he promised that Ohio to George Bush.
To deliver the state of Ohio to George W. Bush. And he's the CEO of America's largest voting machine company. It's an Ohio company, by the way. So we are asking them to do this now on their own because it's the right thing for our country. If they do, we will laud whichever companies decide to do so, high and low. And if they don't, we will launch a massive divestiture against their companies, their affiliates, and their clients. We're going to vote with our pocketbook because that's really the only vote it seems like we have left in this country.
Well, Brett, so, let me give you a possible ally to your cause, and one I'm sure you've probably already considered. Teresa Hines-Carey came out just this week and said some things that we really haven't heard a lot about in the mainstream press. She pointed out that 80% of the voting software is owned by just a few companies, and they all have Republican ties. And
two companies.
Just two companies own 80% of all voting software. And she expressed concern, first time I've really seen this from a, you know, a mainstream political figure, that the vote may have been hacked. Now, I heard a lot of derision with her comment, but that's the kind of comment that you can't keep out of the mainstream press. Have you tried to join forces with her to help fix voting machines?
Indeed, we have. After she made her statement, we contacted her office, and I don't want to go into too many details for the moment, but yeah, we have been in touch with her and with some of the other politicians on this matter. As a matter of fact, John Conyers endorsed our effort right away, sent letters to all nine companies telling them that they need to take the Velvet Revolution recommendations, or he would propose legislation that would deny them the government money that was set aside for these machines in the Help America Vote Act. And I can break some news on your show right now.
Go right ahead, please. Always.
I just received an endorsement letter from David Cobb, who was the presidential candidate for the Green Party, and he too has just now endorsed the Velvet Revolution campaign and has sent letters to the nine voting machine companies, urging them to take our recommendations immediately. So
that's important. I'll tell you, I met David Cobb, the Green Party candidate, at the counter inaugural we had in Washington on January 20th of this year, and he said he'd be coming on this program in the future, so I want to throw that out to my listeners
and
as well.
And he, I mean, really turned out to be a hero this year. He and Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian presidential candidate, because those were the guys who stepped up and said, hey, something stinks in Ohio, we demand a recount. We're presidential candidates, and we demand a recount, when John Kerry was not doing that. So
you know,
they really stepped up.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can contribute to the conversation by going to my blog at radioinsidescoop.com. Post your comment on there. We'll be reading some of them. And let me read a couple of them to you right now from the blog. We have someone who posts as Liberator Rev. He writes, despite what they say, crime does pay, and most of the time criminals get away with many of their crimes. The thing that usually trips them up is that they aren't content with their many successes, and they keep at it until they make a mistake or get tripped up by the good guys, either getting clever or lucky. The greedy old party, the GOP, has gotten away with plenty of criminal behavior that may never be made public, especially with a complacent, if not actually complicit, mainstream news media. My only hope is that they get so emboldened by their success that they may eventually screw up and get caught red-handed. Let me ask you, Brad, relating to that comment, do you think the GOP has gone far enough, gotten arrogant enough, that actually their crimes will be caught?
They sure seem to be begging for it. I mean, you've seen this stuff lately with Tom DeLay and a bunch of other Republican congressmen now, you know, scandals, money that they've taken from lobbyists and foreign agents for these trips and so forth. Yeah, I think there's a level of hubris out there that we haven't seen in a long time, and, you know, I'm happy to give them all the rope they want. I do suspect they're going to end up hanging themselves.
I got another blog comment by Steve down in Georgia telling me it's Valdosta, not Valdosta, and accusing me of being a Yankee. So I apologize. I'm actually from Tennessee, but I have not been enough to Valdosta, and I will now at least pronounce it right. But let me ask you about something going on in Georgia, not just Florida, something, frankly, I read for the first time on your blog, Brad, and that is a bill in the Georgia State Legislature to make it more difficult for people to vote. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you've got a bunch of folks out there on the right who seem to be coming out and saying, oh, we're concerned about voter fraud. Well, that's good news. I'm glad to hear that. I'm concerned about that, too. However, what they seem to be doing doesn't seem to be doing anything about voter fraud. It actually seems to have to do with keeping people from being able to vote. And down in Georgia, there's now a bill in the House that will require photo ID for voters. And, you know, a lot of folks don't have photo ID. They don't have a driver's license and so forth. This mainly, of course, affects minority areas
and poor people. I mean, people most likely not to have a driver's license are poorer people, frankly.
Indeed. And there's, you know, been just all of these plans. You've heard of the felons list, the folks who were purged from the voter rolls in Florida and in Ohio. And, of course, in Ohio itself, areas that, you know, had fewer voting machines, again, minority areas, more likely to vote Democrat, I guess, than Republican, they had fewer machines in the general election in some areas than they had in the primary election. So folks were waiting online for 10 hours.
Right.
Use their franchise
in Ohio
to vote. It's unbelievable.
All right, I just realized, Alice, you're still on the line. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Okay, do you have any further comment or question? Because we're about to go to commercial.
No, but there was a small article about it in the paper today. It looks like they're working on it here in Eureka.
Well, we're doing our best.
Make noise, guys. Send emails to your legislators, to your newspapers. Making noise really does make a difference, and I can tell you after the break how you can do that at velvetrevolution.us.
Thanks very much, Alice, for your call.
Yeah, thank you.
Caller, let me just see who you are, and then we'll hold on to you till we go past the commercial break. What's your name? Where are you from?
John Morrell. I'm from Central Point, Oregon.
Okay.
I want to talk to you about religious fundamentalism. I sent you my book in January.
Okay.
It's Religious Fundamentalism, Stupid.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you hang on the line, and we'll be right back after this commercial break with more of Brad Friedman, the blogger who has really broken a lot of stories regarding voting. If you just hang on 1 second, we'll be right back. I'm going to discuss also the role of blogs and the press right after these messages.
Hannah Briggs, now 94 years young, the ethical treatment of animals has been her life's work. Anna Briggs feels that each dog at the Briggs Animal Adoption Center in Charlestown, West Virginia, from scruffy mutt to sleek purebred, deserves a loving home. All have been spayed or neutered and current with their shots and vaccinations. Plus, the majority of dogs have completed basic obedience training. You can find photos and bios of the dogs at the Briggs Animal Adoption Center website, www.baacs.org. That's baacs.org. You'll be doing something very nice for the pet you adopt, and it doesn't take long for you to discover how much these pets will help you and add to your quality of life. The Briggs Animal Adoption Center is an affiliate of the National Humane Education Society. For more information, call 304-724-6558 or visit their website, www.baacs.org.
Magellan! No. Well, who knows what Magellan did?
Sail around the world!
Right! Now.
Sometimes, a child who doesn't seem interested is really a child with a speech or hearing problem.
Blackbeard? Who said Blackbeard? And what did Blackbeard do? He was a
pirate.
Time and again, it's been shown that a young student's ability to read and learn begins with speech and language and hearing skills.
Jamie, are you with us? Who can tell us?
He wanted to go to India.
Many communication disorders can be detected early and corrected, so learning and literacy skills can develop normally. Make sure your child has the speech, language, and hearing abilities to keep up in class. For more information, visit ASHA.org, a public service message from the American Speech Language Hearing Association and this station.
A new route to
Asia!
Good!
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I think our caller was wanting to talk about religious fundamentalism. That's fine. Actually, tomorrow I am doing a show entirely on religion. I hope the caller will call back at that time. But right now I'm trying to focus on what Brad Friedman is doing. He is a blogger, and he's been focusing on voting, but not only voting, really all kinds of things. And I think Brad Friedman is a perfect example with his blog, which is called bradblog.com, of how blogging is finally entering into the mainstream press. And so I want to talk about voting, but I also want to talk about the broader question of the media and what role bloggers have to play. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can contribute to my blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Brad, I want to ask you, how did you get into blogging?
You know, it was innocently enough, actually. I had heard about this blogging thing and thought, oh, well, that sounds like a fun idea. Get in there and write about stuff that I'm seeing out there and things that are on my mind. I really didn't have any idea that I was going to end up being an investigative blogger and getting mixed up in so much of what I have. I just started talking about what I was seeing out there, and before I knew it, folks were leaking information to me out of Congress, and I was finding things online and reporting on them. I broke the story of the White House website scrubbing incident just prior to the election, and that story got picked up by the Washington Post. The point you make, I think, is a good one. The corporate media now has dwindled down to such a small group of folks who control everything, really, that goes out over the media. That they're not reporting. I mean, there was hundreds and thousands of incidents after the election of election irregularities, and they just didn't make it into the mainstream press almost at all.
No, there was one guy at MSNBC that did a few reports, but that was really about it.
Yeah, that was really very much about it. And, you know, so by the time we got around to January 6th and Congress was going to confirm the electoral results, well, you know, most of Congress, Republicans particularly, were able to stand up and say, there is no evidence. This is all conspiracy theory nonsense. And
right.
In fact, there was hundreds and thousands of documents and pages that was specific, direct evidence of election irregularities and thousands of votes appearing out of nowhere for George W. Bush or disappearing in another county. There was very much evidence, but the corporate media is not reporting it. So, frankly, it has fallen to guys like myself and yourself to get that message out. And, you know, I would recommend every citizen out there start up a blog. You can go to blogger.com, get one for free, and be up in 5 minutes and, you know, get your voice heard, because it's not being heard in the mainstream media, and we have to take matters into our own hands.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Brad Friedman. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hi, my name is Kurt Melk. I'm from Washington, D.C. How you doing?
Hi, I'm good. What's your question for Brad?
Well, I'd like to know a little bit more about your Velvet Revolution divestiture campaign against the vote machine companies. Are you actually trying to put them out of business or get them to change their ways?
Brad?
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, that's a very good question. Frankly, we'd like them to change their ways. We'd like them to do the right thing for this country. You know, there's a lot of people who are interested in voting that only uses a paper and a pencil. There are a lot of other people that are interested in boycotting the next election or two if something isn't done. I think this is not good for our country. And, while we're spreading democracy throughout the world, theoretically, our very own democracy is falling apart. So,
well, Brad, be a little more specific, if you would, about the Velvet Revolution. What exactly are you asking these companies to do? And if you could answer Kurt's question, are you, what do they have to do so that you don't divest? Try to encourage people to divest from them and put them out of business?
Well, we've got a number of points. Specifically, they need to voluntarily open their hardware and software for inspection. They need to provide voter verified paper ballots. They need to assure that there can be no form of networking on these voting machines so that they can't be hacked from outside. We want them to allow for independent monitors of the vote tabulating process. You know, there was one point during the election in Ohio where Warren County had locked down the building, kept out all press from being able to witness the counting of the votes, and they claimed it was because of a Homeland Security warning from the FBI that they were on a some sort of terrorist attack list or something. Well, as
I don't think they ever
later, they weren't.
Yeah, so I don't think they ever showed that they were.
You know, the FBI said we know nothing about that. So, you know, a few other things along those lines that we've asked these companies to do. And let me ask your listeners, please, it's very important. Go to velvetrevolution.us. click the link that says send email to the companies. And what you're doing is in less than 30 seconds, you'll send an email to all nine companies saying, hey, we stand with the Velvet Revolution. This is the right thing to do for our country. It's not party-based. It's issue-based. You know, let them know that you are with us here and you demand that they do the right thing. One voice, I promise you, really makes a difference. VelvetRevolution.us, sign that letter, and while you're there, we're completely supported right now by the people. And so feel free to make a donation because all of this is expensive, and we don't have government funding like these voting machine companies
no.
do. So we need you guys to help us fight back.
We certainly don't. Let me turn to our caller, Kirk, and ask you what your thoughts are on all of this.
Oh, well, I believe that the last election was rigged. And I think that the voting machine companies have a lot to hide, and that's why they don't want us looking at what they're doing. And I know that there's a lot of bills going on in Congress now to get a lot of the same things that Velvet Revolution is asking for.
That's true. Rush Holt of New Jersey has the most prevalent bill. That, in fact, I should tell you that from my work in Congress, a majority of members of Congress would vote for that bill if it came up for a vote. Virtually every Democrat and a decent minority of Republicans are on record supporting the bill, but it cannot come up for a vote unless the leadership of the House, and that means Tom DeLay, want it to come up for a vote, and the Republicans in the House are keeping it from coming up for a vote. So that's another thing that the Velvet Revolution and other campaigns will do, hopefully, is encourage the Republican majority. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I argue with Republicans all the time about this issue. And some of them, a lot of them say, oh, I didn't even know there were any voting problems. But a lot of them admit that if only to shut us up, if there's no conspiracy, to shut us up, to keep Brad and me from claiming that there was one, from wanting to investigate it, let's have voter verified ballots. All you have to do is paper records. And for the life of me, I can't even think of an argument opposing them.
Yeah, I mean, if they're concerned, yeah, it's really crazy. The Holt bill you're talking about was introduced prior to the 2004 election.
That's
and
right.
As you said, yeah, they didn't even allow it to come up for a vote. What possible reason in the world, you know, can they have for saying, hey, no, we don't want to be able to go back and count the votes to make sure that they were accurate? I mean, it's incredible. So I don't think they have a reason, which is why they simply just don't allow it to come up for debate.
Brad.
Go ahead, Kirk.
I just wanted to know, does Velvet Revolution have any plans to blast Congress with emails to pressure them to work on some of this legislation?
Yeah, we hope so. We're trying to do a whole lot in a hurry. The Divestiture for Democracy campaign was just the first step of our mobilization. You know, we need everybody to jump on board for that. And, yeah, we're going to start targeting members of Congress and the Senate and the House to, you know, get them to act on this issue instead of hide on this issue. So, you know, if you come on over to VelvetRevolution.us and sign on up, we'll be sending out emails, again, calling on this Citizens Brigade, and that's what Velvet Revolution is, to you know, come on by and make some noise in a massive citizens protest.
Kirk, I want to thank you very much for calling in. I hope you'll call in again sometime.
Thank you very much.
We have to go to commercial break. When we come back, I want to take the question a little bit away from voting and on to really the question of the blog. We have so much paid White House operatives from Jeff Gannon or James Guckert, whoever he is. We've got people like Matt Drudge on the right and the bloggers on the right who help take down Dan Rather. I want to talk in general about, with Brad Friedman, about what he thinks the role of the blog is outside the mainstream media and what we can do to counteract some of the people paid by the right to defend this administration. If you're on the line, hang on. We'll be right back after these messages. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back.
But did you know that it's the number one killer of women nationwide? Some of these women may have it and not even know it. Heart disease claims more lives each year than breast cancer, lung cancer, or strokes combined. But there are steps you can take to protect yourself against it. While not smoking, daily exercise, and a nutritious diet are good for your health, They're critical in the fight against heart disease. Most important, get regular checkups and ask your doctor about risk factors, especially if you're over 40, when the risk of heart disease increases dramatically. For more information on how you can prevent heart disease, contact your local American Heart Association or visit their website at www.americanheart.org. It's never too late to protect your heart health. Start now.
If you're looking for a great deal, look no further than the CX 4600 All-in-One from Epson. No one else gives you so many great features at such a brilliant price, like individual cartridges of DuraBrite ink for water, smudge, and fade-resistant photos, and built-in card slots to print directly from memory cards. You can also restore your old photos to their original beauty, all for around $99 after a $30 mail-in rebate. Buy now and also get a $20 reward card back by mail. For more brilliant deals, visit Epson.com/promotions.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest today is Brad Friedman. He is the author of The Brad Blog, which you can find at bradblog.com. He's been breaking a lot of stories. I've been focusing on breaking stories out of Washington. He's been breaking them all the way in Los Angeles, and yet they are all over. There are stories in Florida, stories in Georgia. We're both doing our best to get around the mainstream media, and we're also taking your calls at 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Brad Friedman. Caller, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Yes, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you from?
John Morrell. I'm calling you from Central Point, Oregon.
Oh, you're calling back. I'll tell you, we're having a long discussion on religion tomorrow. I hope you'll call in for that. Do you have a specific comment on blogging or voting?
No, I just wanted to talk about the religious fundamentalism, and I've written a book about it. I sent it to you, but I'd like to discuss that.
Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to do an entire show on religion tomorrow. I hope you'll call back in at that time.
I'll call tomorrow.
Terrific. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, you know, I do a lot of different topics here on The Scoop. Tomorrow, in fact, we are doing a show entirely on religion. Sometimes it's a little bit confusing on my website, but that's tomorrow's show. Let me get back to Brad and ask him about the role of the alternative media, specifically about blogging. You know, it's not just people like Brad. You've got people like Matt Drudge, who's been around far longer than either of us. And Matt Drudge, interestingly enough, I've met the man at a radio and records convention just last year. And I asked him about the well-known stories that George Bush used to use cocaine regularly. And he said, yeah, he knows all about that. And he knew about it in 2000, but he wasn't going to break that story. Now, this is interesting because Matt Drudge is someone who, you know, Drudge, the whole name means someone who drudged through the media and find out anything. He reported on some kind of sleazy affair he thought Kerry had that not only did Kerry deny, but the girl or whoever denied as well. He's looking for all kinds of Drudge, but he won't find Drudge on this administration. He won't find the sleaze. And yet, George Bush doing cocaine has lots of witnesses, even George Bush himself won't deny that he did cocaine, and yet this story doesn't make it into the mainstream press. So I guess my question for you, Brad, is, you know, these right-wing bloggers, do you see yourself as the flip side of their coin, or maybe even more honest and direct than they are?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to think I am more honest and more direct. At least for me, I can only speak for myself. You know, there are, as you suggest, millions of blogs and bloggers out there. The stuff that I try to stick to is stuff that has hard evidence, to prove it. I like posting documents, court papers, actual confirmable things, not just rumors. A lot of stuff that Drudge has reported is rumors, and a lot of stuff, frankly, on the right in particular seems to be rumors without, hard information to back it up. So one of the things that I've also helped organize is a group called blogcall.org, which was just featured in Monday's New York Times, where we are taking investigative bloggers like myself and doing weekly conference calls, inviting the mainstream media in to ask us, and I was the guest 2 weeks ago with Clint Curtis, inviting them to ask us the tough questions, to ask me, to ask Clint Curtis the tough questions, because, you know, we're not going to hide from anyone with the reports that we're doing, at least not with the reports that I'm doing. I'm willing to answer the tough questions.
And let me
don't
just
see that as much on the right.
No, I actually really want to congratulate you for that. Obviously, I do a radio show, so I'm open to anyone who wants to call in and ask me tough questions. And every Tuesday, in fact, in a piece I have that is loved by some of my listeners and hated by others, I invite someone from the right on the program and have a debate on the issues of the day. What's interesting is that I've noticed when I've called in to right-wing talk show hosts, or I've listened to them when I can manage to you know, hold my appetite and not spill it, to listen to people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, they have very good screeners that cut off people who disagree with them, unless they occasionally allow like a really idiotic liberal on the air to sort of make fun of them. But they never allow intellects to come on and challenge them. That's why certainly on this radio show, anyone can call in and their voice will be heard. And I'm very glad, Brad, that you're opening yourself up to critique. But, you know, that's how we find out truth. That's how, if people, you know, catch us in something, I for one, will always admit if I make a mistake, if you catch me in one on air, by all means, let's do it. You know, the goal is truth. But I want to compare that with some of the White House operatives. You yourself, Brad, have done a lot of stories on Jeff Gannon, a.k.a. James Guckert. Did you help break that story, or was that some other blogger?
No, actually, that was some folks over at Daily Coast and Democratic Underground, and then John Aravosis of AmericaBlog.com really took that ball and ran with it and continues to do so, as does RawStory.com and, you know, a few other media groups out there that, unfortunately, we have to label them alternative media groups because they don't have the billions of dollars in funding that, you know, the New York Times and the L.A. Times and the Boston Globe and all those folks have. So,
well, let me ask you the ultimate question, Brad. We only got a few minutes left. Why is it, and this I think is the ultimate question, why is it that bloggers like yourself, like Daily Kos, like the others, are able to find stories that the mainstream media isn't reporting? I myself, for example, have reported stories about Reverend Sun Myung-moon, Crown of the Senate. I broke that story. I broke the story about George Bush setting up a separate intelligence group that still hasn't gotten the mainstream media. Why do you think the mainstream media isn't reporting these kinds of stories?
That's, of course, a very difficult question to answer in 30 seconds, but I'll give
well,
it a shot.
Well, you got about 3 minutes, so
okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it's interesting in the media right now. There is a chill that has been placed on the media. If you look at the Dan Rather situation, where you know, these guys really attacked Dan Rather for what might have been sloppy journalism in a part of his story, but they ended up, you know, taking him down. The right wing did the same thing with Ethan Jordan over at CNN. So there is a fear in the media of the right wing. You know, they've been labeled for years as the liberal media. Now, I haven't seen that liberal media bias that the right claims that they have, but it seems to have so terrified members of the media that they won't report anything. You know, the New York Times article on this blog call was a perfect example. You know, this is a group of progressive bloggers that are trying to get our stories out because we have a tough time getting it into the mainstream, whereas the right, you know, if Drudge puts up a link to a story, Rush and Sean and O'Reilly, they'll pick it up on their radio show during the day. It'll make it to Fox News by night.
Right.
CNN and MSNBC will therefore cover it, and then the next day the New York Times will feel, well, all the news channels are talking about it, so we better do a story on it. All within 24 hours. They have this network that gets these stories out. On the left, we don't. So, you know, I was talking to this reporter at the New York Times about it, and he was considering a story, and he said, well, you know, it's hard to do this story because is there any similar group like this on the right? Is there a network on the right that does the same thing so we can, you know, have balance in our story? And I said, well, yeah, there's a network. It's called Fox News.
Sure.
And as it turns out, he writes a story that is, frankly, three-quarters of the story he's quoting right-wing bloggers about this effort, and maybe one-quarter of the story is even about the organization and what it is we're trying to do. So an article about progressives trying to break the conservative media bias ends up being biased towards conservatives because they're just so frightened of being labeled the liberal media.
And
right
it's always amazing to me, this whole labeling system, the liberal media. I mean, we know example after example, CBS, getting scared because of Dan Rather, did not put out on 60 Minutes all kinds of evidence, for example, about our torture in Iraq. We know the New York Times had a story about the bulge in Bush's back relating to the debate that they were ready to go with, but was told to shelve it right before the election. And it's all because of this fear of being called left-wing media bias. And my question is, when the mainstream media is hiding stories that they know to be true in order to satisfy the right, when can we call them left-wing media? Let me close a bit by sort of my thoughts on this. My belief is that the right, when they cannot argue the facts, they go after people personally. And so they will say, ah, this reporter has a liberal bias, Dan Rather has a liberal bias, whatever, instead of looking at the stories themselves. And I would argue that they shouldn't look at the political leanings of a reporter, look at the stories. And when you are hiding things you know to be true, or refusing to report things you know to be true, or reporting things that you know to be false, then it seems to me you are no longer being objective, and it doesn't matter whether you're left, right, or anything else. I got a caller on the line. Caller, I'm going to give you 20 seconds. That's all we got. Go ahead. Caller, you there? All right, caller, it's too late. I'm afraid your time has run out. I hope you'll call in another time.
Do I have a second to just jump in really quickly on that last comment, Mark?
Yeah, real quick, 15 seconds.
What's even more insidious is this sort of idea of balance that has come out, you know, and it's completely phony. After the debates, you know, you could have a debate where George Bush made 10 different mistakes or lies in the debate, whatever you want to call it, and John Kerry made 2 mistakes or lies, as you want to call it, and the fact-checked report after the debate will, you know, give 2 lies or mistakes by Kerry and 2 lies or mistakes by George Bush, thus
exactly
balancing, giving the appearance of balance to, frankly, an unbalanced playing field. So don't buy that phony baloney balance argument. Fairness is important. Balance, however, is a gimmick.
And when one side is telling the truth more than the other side, it is the role of the media to provide that. I have to tell you, I wrote a paper years back on Joe McCarthy, and the papers would say, Joe McCarthy claims Owen Lattimore is a communist, Owen Lattimore denies it. Now, they knew it wasn't true, but for balance, they showed both sides. Just recently, C-SPAN, for balance, was going to put on the show a Holocaust denier along with someone who says the Holocaust happened. My friends, when you have a lie and the truth, that ain't balance. That is propaganda. And let me conclude with that. Thank Brad very much, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, for coming on the show. Thank you very much, Brad.
Thanks, Mark. VelvetRevolution.us. Come on by, sign the letter.
And check it out. And tomorrow we're going to talk about religion.